that signal, let me move over this hill. Hello, mama, can you hear me now? Hello, mama, can you hear me now? Hello, mama, can you hear me now? Hello, mama, can you hear me now?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. That's right, you're listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I will be your host for the evening. And tonight we've got a number of things to bring by you. This is going to be a show off the cuff this evening. We're so glad that you could join us. We're starting just a little bit late due to some technical difficulties, as if technical difficulties didn't exist. I think they do everywhere. But I would like to tell you just to stick around and sit back, and if you enjoy the show tonight, fantastic. If not, that's okay too, because we're all in a process. This is All Things Reconsidered. Again, thank you for tuning in this evening. My name is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. We broadcast here every Sunday evening from about 10 or so until around 11 p.m. on the Eastern time zone. For those of you on the West Coast, that would be 7 to 8, I believe. There's been a number of things that have happened. Welcome. And if you want to reach us online, you can reach us at www.thetruthis.us, and that would be click on the All Things Reconsidered link. This program is commercial free for the moment, and primarily just a sort of a fun thing that I do along with just putting together some stories and giving it a shot at doing some radio. I've been hunting all weekend long. I've been waiting for the announcement to come out that President Bush is resigning, and it hasn't happened yet. We've been looking at a lot of different things happening this weekend. Primarily, I'm actually in a chat room. I'm in the Tom Hartman chat. If you're listening to this show and you're not in the Tom Hartman chat room, then please do come and join us. We are here every time for this particular show. It's hard for me to read it and continue to do the show, but I'll do the best that I can. anyway, Tom DeLay. Let's talk about Tom DeLay. I kind of have been searching and trying to find all the stuff that I can on this guy, mainly because there's so much out there. I just couldn't believe it. It's just like everybody has these amazing recordings and articles about how evil this guy is, and yet he has been in power for over 10 years. as the House Majority Leader of the United States House of Representatives. And it is truly amazing to me that, you know, for this long that we've been giving this guy a pass to do pretty much whatever the hell he wants to do.
Welcome.
Again, is a live program, and so if you hear sounds that come in out of the side that make no sense, just sort of ignore them and keep going. I don't have a studio. I'm doing this from my home, and there are so many different things that can happen at this point. You know, I'm just lucky that we've been able to put together 9 shows without too much of a distraction. But anyway, back to Tom DeLay. And I wanted to play some. This is a big deal, and the reason why I say it's such a big deal about Tom DeLay is that we have in this country now indicted a guy who has the distinction, if you will, the dubious distinction of being the most admonished member of the House of Representatives, and not only that. He is the highest ranking member ever to be indicted or charged with any crime. Now, you know, I mean, you know, let's be honest about something here real quick. First of all, I would say almost, let's see, I think there's 435 members of Congress. I could be wrong with that, but I believe there are 435 members of Congress. I would venture to guess that probably 435 of them are on the take in some way, shape, form, or fashion by corporations. And I think that it's really important to understand that, because I think, you know, we are, you know, everyone's in an uproar over Tom DeLay, and I'm not sticking up for the guy at all in any way. But the bottom line is that what he's indicted for would be legal in many other states. Texas has a law, it has very few laws regarding campaign finances, but it does have a law that political action committees cannot accept money from corporations. It can only accept money from individuals. Now, TRMPAC, the Texans for a Republican Majority Political Action Committee, has received money from, gosh, probably a dozen corporations, including Sears, the Williams companies, which are heating and air conditioning companies. A number of larger corporations have donated money to Texans for a Republican majority. Now, in a number of other states, including the one where I am broadcasting this from, which is North Carolina, that would be okay to do that. And he would not be indicted for that crime. So, you know, I'm kind of grateful he's in Texas, that he's gotten indicted. But I wanted to... I also wanted to, as we're doing this tonight, I wanted to try to play some audio, and here's something that this is his I believe this is his statement when he got indicted.
Entirety.
This morning, in an act of blatant political partisanship, a rogue district attorney in Travis County, Texas, named Ronnie Earle, charged me with 1 count of criminal conspiracy. A reckless charge wholly unsupported by the facts. This is one of the weakest, most baseless indictments in American history. It's a sham, and Mr. Earle knows it. It's a charge that cannot hold up even under the most glancing scrutiny.
I'm going to pause that really quickly because I think it's kind of important to point out that later on, after this interview, he actually went on record as saying that he didn't know what he was charged with. And this is the day of the indictment. So, you know, later on he says, well, you know, I'm not even sure what I'm charged with. So let's continue listening.
This act is the product of a coordinated, premeditated campaign of political retribution, the all-too-predictable result of a vengeful investigation led by a partisan fanatic. Mr. Earle is abusing the power of his office to exact personal revenge for the role I played in the Texas Republican legislative campaign in 2002 and my advocacy for a new, fair, and constitutional congressional map for our state in 2003. As it turned out, those efforts were successful. Texas Republicans did indeed win a legislative majority.
Yes, they did, and really, you know, I think it's funny that he says, yes, they did indeed win a Republican majority. Well, what happened was he got a lot of money and was able to bribe and cajole enough Republicans into the state legislature to redraft the boundaries of Texas, of the congressional districts in Texas, despite the Democrats' vehement opposition to this. I mean, you know, I don't know if anyone remembers, but back when this was going on in 2002, the Texas Democrats in their legislature were chartering planes, buses, and trains to get the hell out of Austin, Texas, so that they didn't have to vote, so that there wouldn't be a clear majority, so that this stuff would not go through. I mean, they were actually, and Tom DeLay himself was admonished for using the Department of Homeland Security to track a plane, a chartered plane, from Austin, Texas, up into Oklahoma, where one of the Democratic lawmakers had flown to, to meet up with other Democrats there in Oklahoma, and I think even the governor of Texas had ordered the Texas Rangers to find these Democrats and bring them back. I mean, it was really a big mess, and actually, it was kind of interesting to watch how the Democratic process was hijacked. And this is the man who was pretty much the ringleader for every bit of it.
A fair and representative congressional map was drawn.
And I got to laugh with that. But anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
Was approved by the legislature. And the Texas congressional delegation now, after the 2004 elections, fairly represents the values and attitudes of the people of the state of Texas.
So that means they're all corrupt and prefer to take bribes and not work for an honest dollar, according to Mr. DeLay.
Over the course of this long and bitter political battle, it became clear that the retribution for our success would be ferocious. Today, that retribution is being exacted.
Well, you know, let's put it very plainly. The district attorney of the county there in Texas that Austin is located in, and the name of the county escapes me in the moment. But the district attorney over the last he was elected four 6-year terms, has indicted 15. Politicians, 11 of whom were Democrats. So I'm not really too sure whether or not that would be an accurate statement. I would say that the district attorney himself probably is more of a guy who goes after abuses of power, and whoever happens to be in power in the moment, if they're a Democrat, well, then he goes after a Democrat. And, you know, if the Democrat, and I'm, you know, a supporter of most Democratic causes, but, you know, because of that, you know, I mean, if there's a Democrat that is on the take, as far as I'm concerned, if they're breaking the law, then they need to be dealt with swiftly and removed from office. But this particular district attorney has not been overly bashing in the Republican area. I mean, I find this charge to be completely BS.
Mr. Earl, an unabashed partisan zealot with a...
Well, and I guess, I know I'm not letting Tom talk, but that's okay, too. He calls Mr. Earl an unabashed zealot. You know, I wrote an editorial this week, and in the editorial it was talking about how when you are... wholly corrupt, and you live in a corrupt world where everyone around you is either on the take or is working alongside of you to create corrupt government, then perhaps, just perhaps, everything that you see And everything that you encounter must be corrupt as well. I mean, it has to be. There's no other way around it. If your world is corrupt, then your worldview will be corrupted. And it's my understanding, it's my belief, that DeLay cannot see anything else but corrupt politicians, corrupt district attorneys, anything but corrupt people around him. So, you know, the bottom line here in listening to this is keep that in mind. I mean, if your worldview is corrupt, then everything you're going to see is corrupt.
Well-documented history of launching baseless investigations and indictments against his political enemies has been targeting a political action committee on whose advisory board I once served. During his investigation, he has gone out of his way to give several media interviews in his office, the only days he actually comes to the office, I'm told.
And, you know, I mean, I really, it's hard for me to stomach listening to any much more of this particular interview because it's so, he's full of crap. DeLay is famous. He was famous for holding court in his office with the media to completely blow away some terrible liberal senator or congressman or idea or, you know, and now all of a sudden, other people doing that is completely off base and out of the norm. You know, the hypocrisy is just too much for me to stomach at this point. But I will do this. We will continue on with this DeLay situation. Very quickly, we're going to go over to a faux news special report with Britt Hume and Tom DeLay. And this is kind of an interesting thing because, just give it a listen.
It's campaign finance laws. Congressman, as we noted earlier, I read the indictment. You do stand accused of this conspiracy. Do you know what it is exactly you are believed to have done or accused of doing to start this conspiracy?
Well, frankly, Britt, it's got my own lawyers scratching their head because the indictment is not specific about what I'm being charged with. See, all they wanted to do was get an indictment so that I had to step aside temporarily as majority leader. That's been their goal all along.
How do you know that?
Well, they announced it. It's on their website, the DCCC, the Democratic Campaign Committee. And I've been going through this for 10 years. I've had ethics charges filed starting in 1993, again in 1995, a racketeering suit right after that, some more ethics charges right after that, and all of them have been dismissed. And we knew that this has been going on for 2 years, multiple grand juries, and then they come out with an indictment that my own lawyers don't know what I'm charged with.
No. Well, you know, I'm going to pause this real quickly just to comment. You know, I mean, I don't know too many people who have been charged with that many crimes, as he just enumerated them. I'm just thinking about my neighbors and even my congressman, who is Brad Miller from North Carolina. You know, it's hard for me to reconcile what he's saying, because it seems like to me that if someone is charged with that many crimes, there's got to be something there. There's an old saying that comes to mind. I think it's where there's smoke, there's fire. But let's continue listening.
Back in August, you met with Ronnie Earl. Can you describe that meeting and what you said and what he said?
Well, it was a voluntary interview. They asked me to come in, and it was about an hour and a half long, and we went over it. And basically what I showed them was, yes, it was my idea to set up this political action committee.
This is the Texas Republican Majority Political Action Committee, known as TRIMPAC.
That's correct.
And it is TRIMPAC that is alleged in this indictment to have taken money raised from corporations, sent it to Washington through the RNC, and that had it come back as in effect corporate money into the state of Texas, which forbids that.
That's not the case. What this is something done by Democrats and Republicans, totally legal, back in the days of soft and hard money. You could send soft money to the party. They would use that soft money for legitimate reasons, and then they would turn around and use their hard money and send it to candidates. It was even more money than was sent by TRIMPAC to Austin. But that's not the point here. The point here is that it was my idea to set up TRIMPAC. I got it all organized. Then the people that ran it, John Caliandro and Jim Ellis, ran the day-to-day operations. I had no fiduciary responsibility. I had no managerial responsibility. I and four other elected officials were on an advisory board. I went to five fundraisers. They did use my name to raise money, but that was the extent. So I didn't know what they were doing. And frankly, everything that they did with approval of lawyers and accountants.
Setting aside for a moment the question, and it seems to be a real question of whether what happened here, carried out by these gentlemen, was illegal or not. Were you aware of what they were doing in terms of money being sent to Washington?
No, not at all.
You knew nothing of that?
They told me about it later. And they tell me if things are going well. When Jim Ellis is also runs my ARMPAC, and Jim Ellis would let me know how things were going, because I was interested in how things are going and how much money they were raising. Not very little. And in this particular case, I don't know exactly when, but in passing,
in terms of this check, which is shown in the indictment, is a check for something like $191,000 that is shown that has been sent from TRIMPAC to Washington. Now, that by itself does not establish any crime, but sent to the Republican National State Elections Committee. Were you aware that check was sent to Washington at the time? After it was done?
Yeah.
Ahead of time?
No.
And did you at any time engage in any discussions with these men about how money that was raised by TRIMPAC from corporations would be dispensed?
No. I didn't know the candidates that they were giving money to. I just had nothing to do with the day-to-day operation. I set it up, as I do other of my political activities. The point here is Texas deserved a Republican House of Representatives. And I came in.
Mr. DeLay is trying to reframe. If you listen very closely, he's trying to reframe the entire situation here. Just I'm going to back that up just a hair, but I want you to hear this as he tries to reframe this.
The candidates that they were giving money to, I just had nothing to do with the day-to-day operation. I set it up, as I do other of my political activities. The point here is Texas deserved a Republican House of Representatives. And I came into Texas. I wanted redistricting to happen because the people of Texas had been sorely underrepresented. Their values and their Republican leanings were sorely underrepresented because of redistricting. And I wanted to change that. And the way you got to change that was to take the majority in the Texas House. And that was my goal. It was successful. We took the House. We did redistricting. We gained five Republican seats.
Well, in furtherance of that, did you encourage this PAC to raise money from corporate sources?
Absolutely. It was legal.
And I know it's legal to do that, but how is it legal? How would that help your cause of electing state legislators in a state where
because
they don't permit the money to come from
under Texas law? You could raise corporate funds to run the administrative services of the TRIMPAC, pay salaries, pay the rent.
Sounds like that, but they obviously raised more than that. They had thousands.
That's why they sent it to the Republican State Committee.
Right.
To launder the money.
Was it your understanding that money was going to come back into Texas?
I wasn't part of that, but that's the way it works.
If this money goes to Washington, and some of it can, because it's corporate money,
it's different
it can't,
money.
I understand. Corporate money can't come back into Texas.
That's right.
But money that committee has raised from individual sources could go into Texas.
Right.
So if that.
Okay. So what Britt is trying to hammer down here, if you'll pardon the pun, hammer down. What Britt is trying to hammer down here is if the money came from corporate sources and went to the Republican National Committee, when it comes back, it's still money that originally came from corporate sources, and Tom is not biting.
Money frees up money from individual
it
donors.
Free up money. The corporate money that TRIMPAC sent to, I really don't want to get in the weeds on this.
I understand that.
But the corporate money that was sent to the Republican State Election Committee could be used by them for their administrative purposes. It's like your brother-in-law sending you some money to take care of the rent. They have other monies that are legitimate hard money, as it's called, raised by, legitimately
from individuals
that they can send down into the races. It's very legal, and it's been done for years and years and years. And the Democrats do it, and the Republicans do it.
At a point here, you decided to waive the statute of limitations on this offense.
Yeah,
and that's mentioned in the indictment. Well, describe that.
Well,
decision.
I was sort of extorted out of that. Ronnie Earl let my lawyers know last week that I was going to be indicted because he had a runaway grand jury, and that he was not going to go in and talk them out of it unless I waived my statute of limitation rights for another 30 days. So I thought, yeah, let's keep working on it.
Did you believe at that time you had a chance of talking him out of this indictment?
Yeah. But that
did he ever say anything to you that gave you reason to believe that?
I didn't talk to him. He talked to my lawyers.
But you talked. But when you were in that meeting in August, you talked to him, right?
Yeah, but that was an interview. That was a voluntary hour-and-a-half interview.
Lawyers present.
Lawyers present.
Stenographer present.
I was not stenographer present. I was not under oath.
Not under oath.
No.
All right. So what's the next move for you now in terms of fighting this case?
I've hired Dick DeGuerin, who's my lawyer, who's the same.
And I'm not too interested in hearing about. I'm not too interested in hearing about Mr. Tom DeLay's defense at this point, because we'll hear plenty about that in the years or months to come. What I would like to do is shift over to a clip that is from Rahm Emanuel, who is he's the chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, as Tom DeLay puts it. But he stands up and sort of defends the DCCC against the DeLay charges that all of these charges were wholly a DCCC invention.
Here's how USA Today demonstrated and portrayed it. DeLay has been admonished more by the House Ethics Committee than any sitting member of Congress. Last year, the bipartisan panel, the only House committee with equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats, unanimously criticized DeLay for three things. It said a golf fundraiser with executives of an energy company created the appearance that he was giving donors special access. It said he improperly tried to have the Federal Aviation Administration fine Texas legislators who were hiding in Oklahoma to thwart action on his plan to redraw the state's congressional districts. And it said he promised a retiring House Republican he would endorse the man's son to succeed if he voted for Bush's Medicare drug plan. In 1999, the committee warned DeLay after he threatened the Electronic Industries Alliance, a trade group, for hiring a former Democratic congressman as its president. And it cautioned him in 1997 about creating the impression that campaign contributions would bring official action or access. Three times, unanimous, Democrats, Republicans admonished Tom DeLay. Isn't there a string of ethical violations here which should bring about his leaving Congress?
Well, the Ethics Committee did render a decision of admonishment, which isn't even in the House rules. It's, I guess, the lowest form. It certainly sounds like a tough word, but it's the lowest form of...
And the person speaking is Representative Thomas...
The thing here is, yes, a question an indictment should render a decision of admonishment... Which
Thomas Reynolds from New York. He's the chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee.
Of a message the Ethics Committee can give out. The important thing here is you ask the question on an indictment, should he resign? And I don't believe he should. I think he'll beat that indictment. I think when you look at even the Houston Chronicle on the comments, which is DeLay's home paper, the comments were that there was real caution on what this attorney general did in a very political indictment, or the district attorney, rather.
Rahm Emanuel, Mr. DeLay was on CNN on Thursday, and I want to read this exchange. DeLay, Ronnie Earl does this to all his political enemies, and particularly in my case, he did it in conjunction and working with Democrat leadership here in Washington. Question, well, that's an explosive charge you make. There was some sort of collusion or conspiracy between Ronnie Earl and Nancy Pelosi and other Democratic leaders in Congress. What evidence, if any, do you have to back that up? DeLay, it's very good evidence that they announced this strategy publicly. They put it on their website. And this strategy is in their fundraising letters. Who specifically, who announced this? The DCCC, the Democratic Campaign Committee, run by Chairman Rahm Emanuel. What evidence is that they consulted with Ronnie Earl, that they've talked to him or they had any dealings with him whatsoever? DeLay, that evidence is coming.
Tim, this may come as breaking news. Websites don't indict members of Congress, grand juries. Websites don't admonish a member, not once, not twice, three times, which is what happened to Tom DeLay, the highest ranking official in the history of the House of Representatives to be indicted. All that website does is reflect a culture, in my view, of corruption and cronyism that pervades the political system. And I find it ironic that here we are on the 11th year anniversary, this week, it just passed, of the Contract with America, where the Republicans said, we're going to clean up Washington and clean up the mess and bring fiscal responsibility to Washington. House Majority Leader, indicted. Senate Majority Leader, under question. Other members of Congress, like Congressman Duke Cunningham, Republican from San Diego, is not going to seek re-election because of a company that does business in front of his committee. He sold his house at inflated prices. There is a culture of cronyism. And what's interesting under one of those admonitions, and I also said, let me back up a little, on that Contract with America, when you look at it, and this week is one way of this anniversary, they would be sued for a breach of contract for what's happened.
But the question is, did you?
No, nobody.
Did you or anyone on your committee?
No.
Or any member of the House Democratic delegation have any contact, involvement with Ron Earl?
Absolutely not.
None.
I had none. You know what's also interesting? The day before, Tom DeLay blamed the Austin paper made Ron Earl do this. The day before, then the next day he said Nancy Pelosi and Rahm Emanuel, the website we have up there. Fact is, websites don't indict. And there is, as you went through earlier to the question to Tom, there's a history here, a pattern from admonitions, this indictment, prior activities, and what happens all the time. Take a look at one of these admonitions was for the bill on the prescription drugs. Because what happened there, that culture, Tim, what they do here is they have a process that this culture of cronyism, corruption, costs the American people money. They told us it was $400 billion. They knew all along it was $800 billion.
But there is some suspicion about Mr. Earl's political motivation. There's a group called the Texas Values and Action Coalition, a group that was trying to get more Democrats elected to the state legislature in Texas. Mr. Earl was the featured speaker in May of 2005, raised $100,000. Why can't his motivation be suspect when he's trying to help Democrats replace Republicans in the legislature, which is what Mr. DeLay was trying to do on the other side?
First of all, Ron Earl, there's a grand jury that indicted Tom DeLay.
The second grand jury.
And he will have his day in court, and we have a process for this, which is where it's going to be, in the courtroom, and he'll have a chance to air his grievances with Ron Earl. Ron Earl, as you know, there's a history, has indicted more Democrats than Republicans. This is an attempt, in my view, to not deal with the problem we have here in Washington, which is, and it's always an attempt to divert other people and say, question other people's motivation. We need to deal with lobbying and ethics reform. Whether it's Bob Ney, Tom DeLay, Duke Cunningham, Congressman Taylor out of North Carolina, there's a culture here, and what we have to do is pass lobbying and ethics reform that changes the way the people's business gets done.
And I'm going to cut him off there, but that, you know, he is absolutely correct. There needs to be a change in the structure of laws that dismantles a culture of corruption that is presently what the culture is in Washington, D.C. right now. And he mentioned a number of other congressmen, including Congressman Charles Taylor of North Carolina, who is from Western North Carolina, who is now being challenged by Heath Shuler, who is a former NFL quarterback, I believe. So, you know, there are some pretty strong folks who are coming up and really trying to challenge the government at this point, challenge the status quo. But following all of this, all these clips about Tom DeLay, I really wanted to sort of get across the message, you know, that we are just at 11 years, I believe it is, anniversary of the Contract with America that Newt Gingrich created back in 94. And I got to tell you, it really blows my mind when you look over the last 10 years how much dismantling of government has occurred under the watch of these people. It is truly, truly amazing. And I think that we are beginning to see the undoing of this Republican majority in our federal government, primarily because, They don't know how to hold a majority in government and do good things. What they do know how to do is to hold a majority in government and do stuff that they want to do rather than to do good things. I'm going to shift shift from one scandal to another. You know, it really does blow my mind that we have a House Majority Leader under indictment. We have a House or a Senate Majority Leader who is being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission for possible insider trading related to sale of stock in his family's business that apparently he knew something about beforehand. And moving from the the legislative branch of government over to the executive branch, we also have the entire executive branch, it seems, under investigation, or at least has been under investigation, now may possibly be under indictment, and we're not sure because the prosecutor or the investigator, the prosecutor, the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, has yet to make a statement. But his, he has concluded his testimony based on all counts with the release and subsequent testimony of Judith Miller. Everybody's sitting around pensively waiting, and as we're waiting, you know, people are speculating exactly what might have occurred. Now, this morning, George Stephanopoulos had an interesting statement, and we're going to go ahead and play that.
It's a political problem, not a legal problem.
Precisely.
It's definitely a political problem, but I wonder, George Will, do you think it's a manageable one for the White House, especially if we don't know whether Fitzgerald is going to write a report or have indictments, but if he is able to show, as a source close to this told me this week, that President Bush and Vice President Cheney were actually involved in some of these discussions.
I don't think writing a report is part of the prosecutor's job this week.
And basically, so what Stephanopoulos is saying is that the prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, may not have sought indictments as much as try to create charges of conspiracy to commit a federal crime, which could be, you know, if he has enough testimony to do that, he could charge the chief and the vice chief and everyone on down the line who was involved in it. So, you know, this is taking a lot of twisty turns over the weekend. And, you know, I for one, I'm not going to speculate. I think, you know, I would love to see Bush and Cheney and Rove, especially Rove. Oh my God, especially Rove, do the frog march. But I would like to see it done the proper way. And not have them be charged with something only to come out smiling, you know, smelling like a rose and smiling 2 weeks later or a month and a half later. These politicians who are presently in charge of our government have consistently been able to avoid prosecution. Have been consistently able to. I mean, they're like the Teflon Don, man. You know, everything that they do, they seem to be able to get away with, and I'm hoping that that is finally coming home to roost, but I'm not going to count those chickens until they hatch. Just not going to do it. Switching over to another story, this past weekend, and I did last Sunday night's All Things Reconsidered, was a show that was about the march in Washington, D.C., in which several hundred thousand people attended, not tens of thousands and not maybe 100,000, but several hundred thousand, and several meaning anywhere from 2 to 5, who the hell knows. They don't count these things anymore because the Bush regime says don't count. We don't want, you know, to know official numbers because it could look bad. And that was right after the Million Man March, another march that was done in 2001. Apparently, and I'm just going to read this part of this story. Now, this is out of the Washington Post from Saturday, and I woke up Saturday morning and was reading this, and it kind of freaked me out because I was there. I'm going to read this. This is by Martin Wheel and Susan Levine of the Washington Post. biohazard sensors showed the presence of small amounts of potentially dangerous biohazard sensors showed the presence of small amounts of potentially dangerous tularemia bacteria in the mall area last weekend as huge crowds assembled there, but health officials said that they believe the levels were too low to be a threat. Health authorities in the Washington area were notified yesterday, that would be Friday, that the bacteria were found in and near the area between the U.S. Capitol and the Lincoln Memorial, where crowds had gathered Saturday for an anti-war rally and a book festival. The notification, which came from federal health officials, said that after the initial detection, subsequent tests supported the presence of low levels of the bacteria. However, officials also said that they did not believe the findings posed a health problem. According to Vaughn Roebuck, a spokesman for the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said, we pretty much feel there is no public health threat. There have been no reports of tularemia, the disease that is caused by the bacteria. We just wanted to alert the medical community to watch out for cases. Just keep your eyes open, he says. Health officials said that the usual incubation period is less than a week. Symptoms include fever, chills, headache, muscle ache, joint pain, dry cough, and conjunctivitis. Officials said that they believe the quantities detected were too small to have been an attack. In nature, you know, naturally, the bacteria is found in rodents and small animals, and the working hypothesis that they say is that something in the environment got stirred up. why that day? That's not what is explained. It's just that that happened during that 24-hour period on the 24th and none since then. This is something I'm going to be following very closely for a couple of reasons, primarily because, I was there. I haven't been sick, so, you know, I got sick right before I went. But I just want to make sure that, you know, that anyone who's listening to this broadcast who might have gone to this event, if you're not aware of it, now you are aware of it, and just kind of keep an eye on your health. I think it's, you know, there's not enough progressives in the world, you know, and now that they're I don't want to say that there was a terror event, absolutely not, or that the government was gassing us or trying to testing us or whatever, but I will, because I'm not a tin hat guy, but I will say that this would have been a perfect event to try to do some testing. if you get sick and your doctor says that's what it is, then make sure your doctor gets in touch with the CDC and lets them know. This week's music, I was over the weekend and next week we're going to be doing a show. Hopefully next week we'll be doing a show on some interesting things, such as some protest music. Basically some protest music of the 60s and protest music of the present. And hopefully doing a couple interviews with some musicians related around this. I've got some irons in the fire in that area. Nothing confirmed, but you know how things work all the way up to the last minute. Tonight, what I wanted to do, and I have permission from this gentleman, is to play you a song that is by a gentleman named Scott Ainsley. And Scott Ainsley is a blues guitarist. He calls himself a blues guitarist and historian, and is very much, you know, he's very much a progressive kind of guy. And this song that I'm going to play you is called Don't Obey. He is based in Maryland and has a number of fall and winter performances in Ohio, Kentucky, North Carolina, Maryland, Iowa, and Vermont. So if you happen to listen, or if you happen to hear that he's coming to town, go out and give him a listen. Hopefully we may even have him on the show next week. We'll see how that goes. But this next recording, if you will, is Don't Obey. This is by Scott Ainsley.
Send you out into the fray.
And that was Scott Ainslie with Don't Obey. Now, you can reach Scott. You can go and check Scott out. If you want to check Scott out, you can check him out at cattailmusic.com. That's C-A-T-T-A-I-L, music, cattailmusic.com. There's a number of things in there, including some rants and some writings and some great stuff. I mean, he's a really interesting fellow, and I encourage you strongly to go and, you know, even buy a CD if you want to. What the hell? We gotta help support those that are supporting us in what we're doing. Now, some of the websites that you've heard or that I've quoted, you know, I got to tell you, the best possible source for anything that you're doing that's involving recording, if you want to catch a clip, go to crooksandliars.com. They are just they always have the best of the best. And, you know, I go there every week, and I always send them emails to support them and tell them that they're doing a wonderful job and you know, financially if I can. And also just, you know, if you want to reach our show, you can reach us at www.thetruthis.us. You know, obviously, if you're listening to the show and you're in the chat room, you know, Tom Hartman really does a great service with making that chat room available. So tell Tom thanks for doing that. This is bringing us toward the end of our show. But I want to tell you, you know, man, this has really been great. Next week will be our 10th show. This is our number 9. So, you know, make sure that you stick around for next week. Coming up next, obviously, is on the radio schedule is Peter Werby. But, again, this is All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. I've been your host, as I am every week, and Chief Bottle Washer. We broadcast live every Sunday evening, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Daylight, whichever you prefer, 10 to 11. So, stick around. We'll see if we can't bring up Peter and shoot him onto the stream. But if you want to reach us again, www.thetruthis.us/ATR. There is an online archive there of every show that we've done, from the best to the worst, or the worst to the best, whichever you prefer. And next week, hopefully we'll have some interviews with some musicians and some music related to protest music from the 60s all the way to the present. Should be an interesting show. So, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you in the very near future.
Specials, your paid admission player, or a 27-inch color TV.
As always, the Pantheon is the place to be on Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. for college football, with 75-cent beers at 94 or Southfield at Ford Road, and go south on Oakman to Michigan Avenue.
Remember, football, beautiful women, and those are all waiting for you at the Pantheon Club in Dearborn.
Centerfold Lounge, Detroit's sexiest adult entertainment club. Ladies, rock and roll and fun. Come celebrate with 20th anniversary specials, a complimentary buffet, buckets of beer for $20, and two for $20 dances. Take pleasure in great giveaways as you dance. dance to the beat. Centerfold, with the greatest ladies, music, and light show. Bachelor and bachelorette parties are always welcome. NFL Sunday. With great food, including pizza and wings, dollar drafts, and $3 bottles. Get there early to catch the game on the big screens. Centerfold Lounge opens 7 days a week at 2 p.m. on John R. One block south of 8 Mile Road. Call 313-892-7333 for more details. Centerfold Lounge, 20th anniversary and NFL action.